Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Can the Minnesota Vikings barely get past another two-win team this week? They are in Tennessee this afternoon, about an hour from now. Matthew Collar joining us, the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Matthew, last week's game, while it will go in as a win in the record books, to me did not feel like a win at all, except if you're John Parker Romo. I don't know how you felt. In fact, I'm curious how you felt, because after that game, I was like, ugh. And it was like eating Taco Bell. Like, it felt okay at the time, and then after, you're just kind of sick.
Whoa. Let's not be besmirching my favorite restaurant here. Look, it was a really difficult game to analyze, because when you looked at how long the Vikings had the football in that game, they completely dominated the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Vikings are the only team in that game this year to hold on to the football for 42 minutes or more, and that's happened less than 25 times since the year 2000. I mean, that type of domination almost never happens in the NFL, and yet they just couldn't finish the drives. And it wasn't even just the interceptions. It was also the other drives that they had the ball forever. But on the whole, I really liked how they played outside of the red zone, which was they ran the football consistently and mostly really well. They used T.J. Hockenson a ton underneath. The Jaguars were playing their safeties way, way back, sometimes almost 40 yards away from the quarterback. And oftentimes, Darnold was taking what they gave him. It was just so frustrating to see 10 minutes of possession on a drive, and then he makes one bad decision, and then the whole drive is blown up. So, I mean, in a normal game where they don't make mistakes in the red zone like that, if you have the ball that much, you put up that many yards, you play defense with that type of domination, it's 35-7 as opposed to 12-7. So I understood it, but I also think that if you play like that all the time, usually you're not going to throw three picks inside the 25-yard line and you're going to win. So I think in the last 2 weeks, Kevin O'Connell and Brian Flores have made some really good adjustments coming out of those two losses. It just hasn't quite paid off on the scoreboard enough. But, you know, Petey knows this as well as anybody. A win is a win in the National Football League.
Oh, you're so sickeningly positive. You're so positive.
Matthew, I love it. I will say this, though, and I'll ask you this question. Are you concerned the regression that I've been sort of looking to see if it's going to happen? It looks like it has happened with Sam Darnold. I mean, I understand what you said. We moved up and down the field, but in the last five games, he's been sacked 16 times. He's got seven interceptions with six touchdowns. And the only team that we beat with a winning record or played against with a winning record was Detroit. So I don't know. I look at it and say, well, we had a great game against Detroit, but everybody else has just terrible records. Jacksonville's got to be one of the worst teams, I think, in the NFL this year, unless we include Tennessee there. So should we be concerned about the way Sam has sort of been getting back to the old Sam that we'd seen over the last 4 or 5 years?
Yes. Yes, you should. Okay. Well, and what I wonder about it with Sam Darnold is just confidence, because I thought that there were times last week, and Kevin O'Connell mostly did a good job of starting to lean on the run game, lean on T.J. Hockenson. I thought throwing a pass on 3rd-and-1 when Darnold was struggling was not a good decision and got him sacked. But You know, I do think that when we look at Darnold and his whole career, this is really uncharted territory for him to be leading a team that is this good. Because if you look at players 2 through 53, not the quarterback, this team can compete with anybody in the NFC. But if the quarterback is going to play like that, you're going to beat Jacksonville, and that's just about it, right? I mean, if you throw 3 interceptions, you take the sacks that he's taken so far this year. So he does have to get back to playing the way he did in the first couple of games. And I think he talked about it this week about understanding the situation and understanding that if you get 3 points, a lot of times it's still a good result when you have a defense like this and you don't have to press it. You don't have to try to fire it into a tight window in the end zone where he missed Justin Jefferson for that interception where he had Aaron Jones coming right underneath wide open. Jones is waving his arm at him, throw me the check down. But I also think that that's not the nature of who Sam Darnold is. And there are just some quarterbacks where you have to ride the wave a little bit because, you know, he threw, just for example, in Indianapolis, he threw those 2 interceptions, but there were 5 throws in that game that only a handful of quarterbacks in the league have the arm to actually make those throws. It's kind of how Josh Allen is a little bit. This is not the same as Josh Allen because he can, you know, run for a 60-yard touchdown or something. But you're always going to have with quarterbacks that have big arms and take risks some high variance. And when it bites you, it's really frustrating. And when it works out, it's really awesome, as we've seen from a 97-yard touchdown earlier this year. So I think this may just be a roller coaster and that there will be an upswing. And I'll give you guys a Sam Darnold stat, maybe something to keep an eye on. In the month of December in his career, he has a touchdown to interception ratio of 21-6. He has been December Darnold. So maybe it's not teams figuring him out. It's just kind of the ups and downs and the nature of the way he plays.
Do you feel at all that Darnold is just trying to do too much sometimes? Just trying to. I mean, you brought up the pass he tried to get into Justin Jefferson, and I sometimes feel like he's just trying to be the hero all the time, and he's had that success the first couple months of the season here. But I feel like those risks and that pressure, he's pushing just a little too much. Do you feel like he's trying to do that more and more?
Yes, 100%. There are times where I've said, just can you play a little more like Kirk? I mean, I know we don't want the 4th and 8th check down, but like a little more of the let's just dump it underneath. And I thought he did that to some extent with Hockenson, but even, you know, Aaron Jones has not been very involved in the passing game recently, and I want more of that. Also, Kevin O'Connell's got to help him. You can't throw 2 screens in a game where your quarterback's kind of freaking out, right? You got to throw like 8 screens. I mean, I think that, you know, sometimes O'Connell will kind of think, you know what, I'll just push the gas pedal down and I'll get him through this. And I think that that gets them into trouble sometimes. But I also feel like with Darnold, he just has this thing that there's no one will ever stop him from doing, where he sees a pass downfield kind of flash and just pulls the trigger without thinking at all. And that's been maybe 4 of his interceptions. I mean, the one against Detroit was this way, where it's like, oh, I see something, throw it. And they're like, no, that wasn't actually what you saw because there was a defender there, as opposed to being able to think it out. I also feel like, too, it's on O'Connell and Darnold to realize that the first 5 games, defenses weren't sure what they were going to see from Sam Darnold. It's not like there was 3 years of tape. So now they are, and the Jaguars came up with a pretty interesting strategy there that we might see more often, which is teams just saying, we're going to play safeties way back. We're going to press Jefferson a little bit more at the line of scrimmage, just double him all the time and give them no opportunities for him to get single coverage ever. And the Jaguars did a good job of that. And so now it's on the Vikings to adjust. I would like to see Jefferson and Addison get the ball maybe not 20 yards down the field all the time. I think that that's something that they could really do a lot better. So I think that actually the Jaguars game, and we'll see how it plays out today, I think it could be a little bit of a wake-up call for them. You can't just kind of keep going back to the same stuff that you were doing through those first 5 games, or it's going to get you in trouble.
So, Matthew, is B-Flow now literally licking his chops, looking at the terrible quarterback play between Rudolph and Levis and what they've been able to do, which is, I'll give you the numbers, 11 touchdowns and 11 interceptions. They're both terrible. They give themselves a really difficult time on defense because the defense isn't as bad as it probably appears to be. But, you know, you give up 20 points to the Colts, 34 to Buffalo, 52 to the Lions, and all of a sudden you go and the Chargers 27 points. You're giving up a lot of points, but a lot of that isn't necessarily the defense of Tennessee. It's all the play of the offense. The giveaways, takeaways is a really a big deal. Is there anything about the defense that gives you a reason to think that Tennessee has an opportunity in this game against the Vikings?
You know, P, it sounds like you want to sack Will Levis.
I'd love to.
To give you an idea of how bad Will Levis has been this year. You know, Pro Football Focus does the grades and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of different opinions on them. But Will Levis has the worst passing grade in the NFL this year, just behind Anthony Richardson and just behind Bryce Young. That is how bad he has been at throwing the football. And you mentioned it. He takes a sack on one of every 10 dropbacks, which going up against this team, that's the top pressure team in the league. And Jonathan Grenard is going to be going up against either a bad or a backup right tackle today. I mean, everything screams that Will Levis throws for 120 yards and 3 interceptions or something like this. I absolutely agree. The only hesitation I have is that Levis did have a pretty good game last week against a Chargers defense that's been really good. He is a big dude with a big arm, and it's always possible that something could happen there. Kind of reminds me of Rick Meyer from back in the day where he just had this huge arm and he was really terrible. And yet every once in a while, he would kind of shock you with some big throw down the field. But I mean, this is as big of a mismatch as comes in the NFL, just overall with the teams, with the quarterback versus the defense, especially. Tennessee can kind of run the ball a little, but they don't have a very good offensive line. They don't have weapons that scare you. And I guess that's the only thing that should concern you is just on paper, the gap is so huge between these two teams that, you know, is it like a trap game or just one of those not take them seriously? I don't know, because you're right. They should be licking their chops to try to get, you know, 4 sacks, 2 picks, something like that against Will Levis.
Matthew, I have one more for you before we go. I am curious about this J.J. McCarthy second surgery and wondering, and it sounds like it's not a big deal, but anytime there's a second surgery after an initial surgery, I'm no doctor, as we've discussed. I'm no doctor, but I'm a little, it makes me say, why? What is the second surgery and why was it imperative and how should we feel about this?
Just real quick, I hear Pete cackling over there as I'm talking about how bad Will Levis is. He wants to hit him so bad.
Tyson got back in the ring at 58. Najarian's like, give me a jersey. Let's go.
You guys are too.
To answer your question, though, so I am not a doctor either, but I investigated the likely possibilities of what the procedure was on Sam Darnold's knee, and the answer is that
J.J. McCarthy's knee, you mean?
I'm sorry.
Oh, God, you scared me. Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that. J.J. McCarthy's knee. And the best that I can come up with is that it's pretty common and that at this moment there's nothing to be concerned about or nothing that should throw off his recovery in any way. It's just a common answer to swelling. And after you have surgeries, sometimes you have swelling. And when you have the best doctors that there are, they have some ways to deal with that rather than just kind of riding it out. And that's what this procedure was. But they didn't give us all the information. You never want to hear procedure, knee. Vikings fans are very concerned about knees. But with this one, my understanding is there's really nothing to talk about here.
All right, buddy. Thanks very much, as always, for the insight.
Matthew, you're the man. We appreciate it.
All right. Football.
You can have the inside story when Najarian signs with the Bears next year for one last shot. I love that.
Yeah, I'm going to bring Mike Tyson.
There we go. We got it. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to The Huddle, 830 WCCO. Great song, but you can't play it for very long.
It doesn't swear, I promise. This is radio.
Oh, good.
We don't swear on the radio. Yeah, yeah.
Into the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line is Sam Darnolding. I think we've established that he is. And we talked about it last week a little bit, Pete, just kind of that regression towards the mean and changing our expectations of what Sam Darnold is. Speaking of changing expectations, and the Wolves are off to a not so great start to the season, again, early. But I truly think, and I'm not sure, I'm not the smartest guy in the room anywhere I go, but I am perplexed as to why people thought the start of the season would be anything different when you take such a huge piece of the puzzle like Karl Anthony Towns out and add guys back in. And we have to remember here that it took like half a season, almost a three quarters of a season, for Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, and Anthony Edwards to figure out how to coexist together in a successful manner on the floor. It took a long time. To think that this was going to happen in a dozen games is just silly. But you listen, Ant's playing well. Julius Randle's playing well.
Yeah.
Rudy Gobert's okay. I mean, in his first season with what we thought would be significantly more playing time, although Naz Reid's not getting a ton more playing time, his numbers are up. It's just a matter of getting them all to work together without breaking down too much game film here. I really think people just need to have a little bit of patience with this and understand that it's going to come.
I also want to add in, too, let's remember that Rudy Gobert punched Kyle Anderson, his own teammate, on the bench. Like, we have seen worse from this team. It is not DEFCON 5 here. We're not panicking. And you know.
But that's Minnesota fandom. Yeah. It's like, yay, we were into that. We played great last year. Oh, we're going to be terrible this year.
Yeah, it could be worse, but it is not good right now. It's a slump. I think that's what they call it.
It's a slump, but also, guys, I think it's a little bit of you to your point, both of you. I think the idea that you have to get the rhythm when you're playing, and Rudy Gobert, that took time, and we talked about it. It would take time. It did take time. And then all of a sudden, it was a magical year last year that was phenomenal, and we went pretty far into the playoffs. Now, can we do that same sort of a thing this year with what we've got? I think the answer is yes. Cats, by the way, having a pretty great start to the year.
I was just looking that up.
I mean, you look over there and you go, wow, did we really get rid of a guy who's got 26 points and 12 rebounds, averaging a game?
Yeah.
I mean, this is something. But, you know, Cat is Cat, and we made the decision that we made, I think, for probably many of the right reasons, one of which is obviously money. I mean, that was a big factor, I think, in this whole thing. But when I look at what the Timberwolves have done so far early, you got to be concerned at least about one thing. And I don't know if Finchie or who would like to address this, but why do the Timberwolves this year have so many turnovers? They just can't seem to be able to hold on to the ball, and the turnover numbers are unbelievable. I mean, against Portland just the other day in game one, they had 23 turnovers. That's not something that works very well if you're looking to win basketball games. The other was in game two, our three-point shooting, get this, Dave, 7 of 39. I mean,
that ain't great.
You know, that's pretty bad, 17.9%. I mean, that's
well,
really,
but who was
awesome.
One of their best three-point shooters last year?
Right, Kat.
Karl Anthony Towns.
And to add on, Pete, to game two against Portland, also 20-plus turnovers. Not good. Yeah.
Right.
Not good.
Yeah, but the consistency of the turnovers, I think, is a major problem. Now, it got a little bit better against Sacramento the other night. We only had 11, but that's got to be the average. I mean, you got to get a lot closer to 11 than basically averaging north of 20. Turnovers a game, or you're just going to be exactly what we are right now, which is, well, we're a 500 basketball team. What have we in the last 10 games? We're 5-5. I mean, we don't want to. If we're going to do that, we're going to feel a lot like the Minnesota Twins, where you know they show flashes of something good, and then all of a sudden they dump right back down again. So that's something that they've got to get this thing figured out. They got to get it figured out fairly quick, because this is early in the season, I fully get it, but when you look at the Western Conference and the usual suspects are up top, and we were starting to become a usual suspect, well, we're not even close. As a matter of fact, we're almost dead bottom. So not so good now for the Timberwolves.
It's disconcerting. I think the quality of teams that they're losing to is disconcerting. You know, they Dallas. Granted, the Mavericks are going to be the Mavericks. They'll jump back into this, but they're behind them in the standings. The Spurs are behind them in the standings. Portland's only won 5 games, and I believe 2 of those came against Minnesota. So these are teams that they should, as a Western Conference power that they were last year, they should be winning. I will stick to my original thought here that, and I guess it's my hope too. I'm just kind of crossing my fingers that this is just going to take some time. That one guy, a Karl Anthony Towns, being out of the mix and adding in a Julius Randle who's been, you know, pretty close. He's not Cat, but he's pretty close, and he costs a lot less, and that's what you want. So I don't think that the sky is falling just yet. I am, but I'm grabbing my umbrella in the case that it is. How about that?
Well, the other thing, and by the way, the other thing that really bothers me, and I know we got to go, but I would just say, on the defensive side, we just aren't playing like we did last year, where we were dominant. We were so dominant, we were holding teams to just very few points per game. And this year, we are much different team, and we're struggling to be able to do that on the defensive side. And that's something. It's not just the offense; it's the defense that we're playing.
Question to the StylesFinancial.com talking text line, and I don't know if this is an actual question or if we're being trolled. How is Carl doing in New York? He's averaging 26.5 points a game. So yes, we've discussed that. And so if this was an actual question, there's your answer. If this was trolling us, it's brilliant, and I respect it. We'll take a quick break and come back. It's fast break time. All of those of you who are lining up on the talking text line to ask when the fast break is happening, it's coming up next. A little later than usual, but all those people waiting, I mean, the texts, I'm just looking at them. Where's Josh? When are we doing a fast break?
More traffic. Josh. People waiting for me to do fast breaks or people trying to watch the fight on Netflix? I think it's pretty close.
Gosh. That was a mess. Are we going to talk about that? That was a disaster.
We can, because I came very close to breaking my TV a few different
times. Me too!
Yeah. And by the way, real quick, don't gaslight me, Xfinity or Netflix, and try and tell me that my internet is the problem. I pay for the most expensive internet that you can get. Don't tell
Netflix
me that.
Netflix not working?
Yeah.
Here's a package that costs $750
a month. Then it would do a speed test. It's like, no, you're not getting
it. That happened to me, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the heck is going on?
You guys ready for fast breaks?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, awesome. Pete's got to stop crying, first of all.
I'm good.
Pete, we will start with you, though. It's not often we talk about the NFL draft in November, but there are a few teams per a recent ESPN analytics posting that shows the top three teams likely to land the first pick. And Pete, you tell me which team is in the most dire need of the top new face of the NFL, the Giants, the Patriots, or the Jaguars?
I'm going to go with the Giants. That's easy. They have struggled so often, and they were a great team. They were a Super Bowl team. They had Manning as quarterback. They had everything was going for them, and they've not been able to do it ever since. And they gave up on a great running back who's, I don't know, he's one of the top running backs, I think, in the league again this year, like he always is. And, you know, they just have torn that whole thing apart. So I would say the Giants.
Who is going to answer then, and I agree with you, it's the Giants, who is going to answer for the fact that they might have to, well, I guess, okay, not. So they'll have an out this year after Daniel Jones. Am I reading that correctly, that they'll have out after 2024, they can get out, but it's still going to be a huge cap hit. I mean,
huge.
What a massive mistake it was to sign this kid to a 4-year, $160 million contract.
It is. After
someone
this year,
has
by
to answer for that.
Yeah,
what's that?
There is an opt out after this year. Yes,
there is. But still, someone has to answer for this. They're paying him so much this year, and he's awful.
Well, and I feel like we've hammered this into the ground. By the way, he got that big payday because he was looking like Patrick Mahomes against Donatel defense in the Vikings for one game.
Not that, no, there's no way it was just one game. While I agree that the timing of it seems suspicious.
I mean, if you measure that up against the rest of his games in his career so far, I'm almost guaranteeing that's near the top, if not the top, as far as stats.
Oh, I'm
but
sure
we'll see.
And guys, I would add one last thing on that, which is, you know, when they're looking at these quarterbacks every single year, they come out of colleges and oftentimes they are coming out of a college that is filled with talent, right? So Was it the fact that the quarterback was so good, or was it the fact that there was so much talent around him that it made him look good type of a thing? And I think that's been the problem for GMs for a long, long time, is trying to actually analyze, is it the team or is it the player? And too oftentimes they just go with the player, and they've been wrong, wrong, and wrong on so many top five picks. It's amazing.
Maybe don't draft a guy out of Duke for football.
Basketball, not football.
Yeah.
Dave, we'll go to you for this one. With the departure of Alex Kirloff and Max Kepler, pretty much become he will be a free agent this offseason, and I highly doubt that the Twins are going to retain him into next year. Should the Minnesota Twins swing for the fences and make it happen with the highly touted outfield slugger Juan Soto?
No. I mean, listen, and there's two parts to this, right? I'd love to see him here, and I'd love for the Twins to make a big swing. But financially, there are so many issues right now, and the money's just not there. From a sheer, and Pete, you know this better than I do, from a sheer business standpoint, with broadcast rights and all the money that they have lost, and I was reading an article today about it. I don't think they should. Fiscally, it's not responsible for them to do it. I just don't think they can do it. I don't think there's any chance. Would I love it? Yes. Heck, go trade for Shohei Ohtani's contract, or give someone a contract that where you pay him $1 million now and $1 million next year, $2 million, and then you pay him another $50 million until they're 75 years old. Whatever they did with Ohtani, I don't think it can happen. I just don't even think it's possible to think about it.
And the most difficult part of the whole thing, quite honestly, is they've got to figure out the ownership, right? I mean, that's something that I think before you can start making those kind of moves, they've got to figure out, all right, who's in charge, who's owning this team, and go through that whole process. Other than, because what if you make the moves now and it's not what the new owners are going to want? So I think that there's a lot of reasons why I don't see the Twins making moves, right? Just yet anyway.
All right, Pete, we'll go back to you for this one. Despite finding ways to win, an overtime drive over Baker and the Bucks a couple weeks ago, and then a blocked field goal last weekend, and now a huge test against the Bills. There, by the way, Bills are favored -2 in Vegas right now. Is time running out, Pete, on Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' undefeated season?
Yes. It's amazing when you look at all the different numbers, and numbers are just numbers. It's the players that are out there and how they function and everything else. But the reality is that Kansas City, they don't look like the undefeated team that they are. And it's interesting. I think at some point that is going to end. I can't tell you when, though, because they've managed to get past everybody so far, and it's been amazing. But they haven't played that great Kansas City game that we've gotten used to over the years. They were struggling with the Broncos, right? I mean, that alone says a lot. So it's going to be interesting, and the Bills probably have a pretty good shot, I'd say.
I'll say this. If the Bills don't do it today, they very well could finish the year undefeated. They have Buffalo today, at Carolina, Vegas, Chargers? Chargers are okay. Cleveland,
<They're> okay.
Houston, Pittsburgh, Denver. They
Houston
very well if they could very well
Dave,
do it.
I think.
What's that?
I think Houston could get them. I think they could.
You think so?
And the Chargers are a better team than people think. Their defense is absolutely incredible, and offensively they're good. They're not great. They're good, but that defense has been absolutely suffocating this year. So the Chargers, I think, could have a shot.
All right, I'm trying to remember who I just went
it's
to.
Me.
Okay, yeah, Dave, your turn.
Yes, sir.
According to the Wall Street Journal, the NBA on TNT will now be called the NBA on ESPN after a massive broadcasting deal was reached in the offseason between Amazon, NBC, and ESPN. We now know where the ever-so-popular sports panel is heading. Was this a bigger loss for TNT or a bigger gain for ESPN?
Oh, boy. That's a really great question.
Thank you. That's my job.
I think it's both a loss for TNT and a gain for ESPN. Because first of all, and we've talked about it before, the studio show with those you know, Ernie and Kenny and Barkley and Shaq is from a television standpoint. We've both done TV. Is the closest to brilliance that I think I have ever watched, and they are so good. I'm not even I was not a giant NBA fan. I'll watch the game. I certainly watch the Timberwolves games. But those guys together and their personalities and the way they mesh is such compelling television that they're fun to watch even if you're not a huge NBA fan. So it's a huge departure, I think, from TNT because that show got great, great ratings. For ESPN, it's going to cost them a lot of money when and they've been making cost-cutting moves, I feel like, for the last 7 to 10 years. But it's a departure from a lot of their shows because I'll be honest with you, a lot of their shows stink. They're not good. They're just not. The chemistry between hosts for any of these programs.
No, Dave, don't sugarcoat it. Tell us how you really feel.
This is not as much of a slight about ESPN as it is that this show is good. I just there's very little. I can't remember the last time appointment show viewing on ESPN for a studio show other than maybe PTI in the early days with Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser, which I loved. And when I used to watch the reruns of SportsCenter when I was in college in the morning. You know, I mean, like those. But everything now, it's people screaming at each other just to have takes. It's not backed by anything. And when you look at the four of those guys on that studio show, it's personality driven. Ernie does a great job of setting them up, and they speak to their strengths. And it looks effortless. It's harder to do than you think, but it's good.
I would say this, it's an absolute monstrous loss for TNT, in my opinion, and a minor gain for ESPN, because ESPN will figure out a way to screw it up. They really will, because they'll turn it into an ESPN show, right? I mean, that's what they do. They put guys together, they do their thing, and, you know, voila, here it is. But Ernie Johnson and Barkley and Smith and Shaquille O'Neal, how do I forget him? But you know, that is a group, and they are funny, they're clever, they're unique, and if any one of those folks in that group ever decide to step away, and maybe it's out of anger because of something that's going on at ESPN, I think that would be a huge blow. So I think this is a terrible departure. TNT is really going to miss them a lot. Guys like me, that's the only time I ever get over to that station, you know, and then sometimes you get stuck there for a while, so that's what they're looking for. It's amazing how good that show. It's the best sports show, I think, of all time that I've seen.
Do we know if the producers are going with them? Is that or are those producers TNT TNT employees?
I gotta figure they're TNT employees down there, right? It seems like that would be the case. If they were able to steal all of them, that would help.
there was an article I read, I think it was in The Athletic last year, which talked about the relationship that the producers had and how they did things from a standpoint of they didn't script everything. They don't script a ton. They just kind of let the guys go. And that's where – and you know this. We both on TV. A good producer that knows how to play to the strengths of their anchors on set – is invaluable. And so if it's not that same producing group, then I agree with you. It could very well be – I mean, look at what happened to Pat McAfee. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of his show before, but it sounds like it's nothing like it was before. And then they put him on Game Day and all – I mean, he's just – I don't know. He's just annoying. But I'm not a big McAfee guy, but, you know, whatever.
You're no fun.
Yep.
I'm really not. Yeah.
Fun. He's fun. I'll like back you, Dave.
Thank you. Is that it, Josh?
That is it, yeah. All right. I wish we could do more, but maybe next week I'll ask you about the producers. We'll see.
The show or the...
Both.
Or the actual... we got some texts to the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. We'll touch on those as well as predictions for the Vikings-Titans today. We'll do that coming up. It reminds me of the Metrodome. Going to the Metrodome. I love the Metrodome. A couple Texans at the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. Danny Jones owes Ed Donatell a percentage of his contract for those games in 2022, says Saul and Blaine, who also texted and said, don't forget about the prime time with Berman and Jackson. That was a good show. You know,
great show.
Berman and Jackson were good together.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good show. Pete, how do you see this one going today? Titans, Vikings, noon kickoff in Nashville.
Well, we talked already about Sam Darnold and has he regressed? Can he pull himself out of that? This is the game to do it. It really is. I mean, it gives him the opportunity against a poor football team. They're okay on defense if you really break it down. But outside of that, Sam's just got to prove to us that he can get the ball to Hockenson and all the rest of the receivers that, you know, JJ. But he's got to show us that he's back. The last five games have showed us that he regressed. Now can he progress a little bit anyway? And I think that's going to be a big deal. I still go back, and this is an Aaron Jones thing as well. When Aaron Jones is there and he's performing, that gives Sam a little bit extra, right? I mean, it's like when you look at Jalen Hurts. Why has he got a much better year this year than last year? Well, he's got Saquon Barkley. Derrick Henry's gone and from Tennessee, and he's not doing too bad out there with Baltimore. And then you look at Jared Goff. Quarterbacks play better if they've got any kind of a running game, and people all wanted to discount the running game. Well, I can tell you this. I'm not sure what they've got when it comes to Tennessee in terms of running the ball. Throwing the ball, we already know, is terrible. So I think the opportunities for the Vikings to turn things around and get look better faster is to get this game going and start strong and start early. We've been doing that earlier in the year, but we haven't been doing that as much lately.
I think last week was a wake-up call for the Vikings. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I agree. While I agree with what Matt Coller said earlier, which is there's going to be very few games that you control the ball for 42 minutes and lose, right? And but it happens because you've got to be good in the red zone. And so I think this week, and I agree with your point, I think this is an Aaron Jones ball game. To me, Tennessee, their defense is decent, but they've given up over 1,000 yards. They're giving up about 4 yards per carry this year. And I think Aaron Jones, if the line plays well, I think this could be an Aaron Jones day. I'll tell you this. I don't have him on my fantasy team, but if I did, I would put him in today. I do have John Parker Romo, by the way, on my fantasy team today because I needed a kicker. Did you see, I don't know if you saw this morning on Twitter, his entrance into the stadium in Nashville?
Oh, that would be great.
So Kevin Seifert, great writer for ESPN, tweeted it, and it was John. He's walking in and says, John Parker Romo got the assignment for Nashville today. He's got a black cowboy hat on, a black sequin jacket, and a tank top that's black. Because he almost looks like if the Undertaker was a cowboy. It's incredible. I'm like, it's brilliant. Like, you're going to get 15 minutes of fame. You might as well use it. I see them winning this one today too. I think this is I hope to say that it's a pretty easy win, but I think there's nothing easy in the NFL, as you know, Pete.
That's true, but they've been giving up so many points against teams that in some cases aren't great teams either, and I think that because of that, it gives a great opportunity. The Vikings offense has played well. JJ obviously has been fantastic this year. They've got to give him the ball a little bit more, but they don't have to force it there. If it's not there, we got plenty of other weapons, and that's what Sam's got to understand as well. Don't force it downfield into double coverage just because you want to get the ball to JJ. Throw it to JJ when he's open.
And I think I want to add really quickly, a yes or no for me. Is he doing this because he's trying to get a big contract for next year?
Wow.
I mean, think about it. He's on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. No,
all right, brother.
You should be right.
Have a good week, man. Good to chat.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
With you.
Thanks.
Everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.